Three, two, one. So, hey, welcome back to Barnstorming PA, our special on the special in PA 18. We're here with candidate Mike Crossey, former union leader with the PSEA, and now he's running in the special. I'm Taylor Lightman, one of your hosts here. I'm a former political operative and you know, sort of the young buck of the crowd here.
My name's Jordy Comis. Hi, Mike. I'm a freelance scholar and community and political organizer, and I try and sometimes be the person with maybe the more provocative ideas, although sometimes I lose out to Chip.
Hi, I'm Chip, you know, whatever, the grizzled vet of the podcast, and we're here with Mike Crossey. Let's get into it with Mike. I've met Mike before, have a lot of respect for Mike. He's done a lot of good work, and I want to give him an opportunity to talk about the campaign.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us about yourself and your family?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on with you guys. I appreciate the time tonight. My wife and I, Eileen, have been married for 45 years. We met at Duquesne University in our freshman year there, and she's been stuck with me ever since. It has been great. She was in the car with me yesterday for about 15 hours, and at the end of the night, I said, "You're still hanging in there?" And she said, "I'm here for the duration." And we've been very fortunate. We met our freshman year, got married a year after graduation from Duquesne. We have two children. My daughter Megan is also a teacher, and her husband is a teacher at the city schools. And we have two fantastic grandchildren with Megan and Luke. And my son Michael is an attorney down in the Philadelphia area. And we have three great grandchildren with he and his wife Gina. They're both attorneys. I tease Michael sometimes and say, you know, how do we get an attorney in the family? We're all teachers. My wife was a health educator at Duquesne University. Michael has his own law practice down in Philadelphia, and like I said, he has three children down there. Our fifth grandchild was just born about 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
We were down celebrating. Thank you. So we were down celebrating the birth of the fifth one, and, you know, there is nothing like, you know, another child in the family, and every time I'm talking to one of the grandkids, it's why I do what I do. People say to me, "Why don't you think about just retiring?" And I go, "You know what? I just can't do that when I think there's work to be done out there. It's just not in the bloodstream." And I come home every day and I go, "Oh, I had so much fun today. I did this and I did this and I gave a speech here." And my wife looks at me and says, "You just have the strangest definition of fun I've ever heard." But we make a great team. She's the rock in the house and keeps us moving. And, you know, I keep getting out there and causing trouble and rabble-rousing. But, you know, why I got into the campaign, it was one of those ones where this is what I do. This is what I've done my whole life. I was a teacher. I became active in the union my very first year in the teachers union, driving back and forth to Harrisburg, lobbying for special education funding for the kids I taught. I was a special ed teacher most of my career. I ended up teaching 34 years, and I want to say about 28, 29 of those years were teaching special ed students, either students with learning disabilities or students who had social-emotional problems and just couldn't make it in the regular classroom. Good kids, but just needed a little different direction. Same thing with my students in learning disabilities classes. You know, I refuse to call it learning disabilities. I always just said it was learning differently. And of those students could really be successful, you know, if we took the time to understand them and took the time to teach them in a way that it made sense to them and worked for them. You know, it was always about how do we just help everybody else be the best they can be.
That's great.
I got a little bit more involved, I actually ended up local president of my teachers association, And while I was teaching, I spent 20 years as local president, local officer. And it pretty much, the same thing carried me. How do you make a difference? And, you know, with my kids in my classroom, I thought, okay, I make a difference for each one of them. At least I try to make a difference for each and every one of them every single day. You know, and in the union world, you know, you try to make a difference for your members each and every day. And so, you know, I loved being a union leader. Matter of fact, one year they tried to fire me for standing up for my union members and brought me up on, oh my goodness, I think it was 476 counts of insubordination.
Oh, God.
I had told my members to ignore a rule that the supervisor put out. And it had to do with a new federal law that was passed. And my supervisor said, do this. And I told all the members not to. And so she brought me up on all these charges of insubordination, one for myself and one for every member of the union. And we sat before the director of special ed, and he said, explain this. And, you know, at first he said, did you do that? And I said, yes. And he said, why? And I said, because she's wrong. And she said, but that's what the law said. And I said, no, it's not. And we kind of looked at each other, and he sat there for, God, it seemed an interminable amount of time, but I think it was about an hour and a half. And he looked up, and he looked at me, and he looked at her, and he said, the next time you decide to take on the union president, make sure you're right. And he looked at me, and he looked at me and he said, and you, young man, need to learn a little tact. And I said, got it. And but anyway, he looked at me and said, you know, you're right. And, you know, and I walked away from that meeting with the belief that unions give you a voice at work and they allow you to stand up and speak truth to power.
Right.
And
on.
I was sold on being a union leader.
That's great.
And, you know, and that's what I've done, and that's what I claim to be. And I mean, I'll never give up the fact that I'm a teacher, but being a union leader and taking care of working families is just what I believe in. And so that's kind of been my whole story. And then I was fortunate enough, you know, a lot of times I do things because somebody says you can't do them. I was getting ready to retire from teaching in my 34th year. And somebody, I thought I just asked a question, but one of the union leaders at the statewide level took offense and said to me, if you don't like the way we do it, run against us.
Uh-oh.
And my friends looked at me and went, run. And I thought, oh, I can't win that. And they said, do you care? And I said, no, we need to have the debate.
Yeah.
So I ran, and I was fortunate enough. I won the position as vice president of PSEA.
Yeah.
It was close. It was 27 votes.
Yeah.
But I won that, and then went on and spent 4 years as vice president, four years as president, and had the great experience as president.
PSEA is the largest union in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes, it is.
Wow, okay.
Yes, it is. We had 180,000 members.
Oh, God.
And we had 180,000 members, and when I got in, Tom Corbett had just cut education funding in the state of Pennsylvania by $1 billion. And I said, well, we either have to change his mind or change who sits in the governor's seat. And so my mission became to take out Tom Corbett.
Yeah.
And we worked on that while I was president. We got Tom Corbett out, the first time anybody ever defeated a sitting governor in Pennsylvania, and we elected Tom Wolf. And so it's funny, when I retired from PSEA because of term limits, they said to me, what's next? And I said, I think I'm going to retire. And Eileen kept looking at me saying, that's not going to happen. And one night I came home and she said to me, what did you do? And I started to laugh, and I said, I announced I was going to run for Congress.
Yeah.
And,
hey, Mike,
you know,
give me a quick overview of the race down there in the 18th. What's going on with it? Who's in the race? What are the chances? Give us a quick overview.
Absolutely. It's a conservative district. started off with Tim Murphy in office as a R+9 district, so a strong Republican district. There were three Democrats challenging Tim Murphy at the time. Since then, he got involved in a pretty hefty scandal and resigned.
So we know right all now, about that.
Yeah.
Right. So we're looking at a special election coming up. I understand it's going to be the first week in March.
Okay.
Now, there's five Democrats that are saying three of us have filed the paperwork.
Okay.
The original three. Two more just jumped in after the special was announced. And but all good people. I've got myself as a teacher union leader in the race. I've got a retired naval officer in the race. I've got a doctor in the race.
Yeah, we...
I've got... pardon me?
We actually interviewed Bob Solomon, the doctor, yesterday. He had some good things to say, yeah.
What about on the Republican side there, Mike? What do you think?
On the Republican side, I'm hearing four. There were three I knew of, but I heard somebody else jumped in today. I don't know who that is. On the Republican side, we've got State Senator Guy Reschenthaler, State Senator Kim Ward, and State Representative Rick Saccone.
Saccone was originally going to run for Senate, right?
Well, that's what he announced. He was going to run for the Senate against Bob Casey, but I guess with Bartoletta in that race, he must be backing off a little bit. The signs are still out saying he's running for Senate.
Yeah,
but he's announced that he intends to run for Congress.
I think Rick Saccone was the guy who came here and talked to the Susquehanna Valley Conservatives about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Oh, was he? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Obviously, Mike, I think you're the best qualified candidate out of all those guys. And wish you luck.
They're all good people, and we all bring a little different perspective to it. I don't think there's, in my mind, there's no doubt that I've got the most experience out there. I've been elected twice before,
right?
Township level and county level. I've got statewide labor connections from my role in PSA. And, and at this point, I believe I'm the only candidate actually writing position papers. I'm a firm believer in not just the 5 second sound bites, but writing comprehensive position papers. I think it's one thing to vote against what's going on in Washington and to rail against Trump and how crazy he is. Yeah. But I think it's also good to tell people where you stand.
Well, Mike, where do you stand? What's your platform going to be, Mike? Where do you stand?
My platform, I've got eight position papers written right now, but basically I stand for comprehensive health care with either a public option or Medicare for all. I think that's
great.
The solution to the health care problems we have. On the economic front, most of what I've written and most of what I campaign on is a $2 trillion investment in infrastructure.
Yeah.
Everything from the traditional roads, bridges, schools, to our river traffic and the importance of our river and locks and things. And down in Greene County, I understand that a large portion of the county still doesn't have broadband. So
oh,
I think
God.
We need to work on our broadband investment.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's all about... stopping these outrageous tax breaks that the multinational corporations have.
Right.
And, it just drives me crazy that if they offshore jobs to another country, they take a tax deduction on that.
Yeah.
Well, the hell with that. Why do they get a tax deduction for screwing our workers? So that's one of the first things I'll take away. The other thing is I've put together a paper that says, if you take government subsidies and grants, federal government grants and subsidies, then you can't offshore jobs and you can't hide your money in the Caymans and not pay fair taxes on it. I think we need to have our corporations. You can't have union jobs without corporations. So I think we need to make sure that the corporations are playing by the same rules as everybody else. And, we have thousands of companies and corporations that pay zero or next to zero in taxes. So a lot of my money comes from those. So I've got a lot written on a good jobs program, investing in people and schools and working families. I've also put together a college affordability platform statement and a very strong environmental platform.
That's really great stuff.
We just want to clarify, when you said you're going to get your money from those corporations, you probably meant by fixing the tax loopholes, you would raise the revenue for your infrastructure. Not that you're personally taking money from from those corporations.
Right.
Okay.
Just wanted to clarify, yeah.
No, good input there.
Yeah.
So I was wondering something, because we're about halfway through, I think. An issue that among the three of us, this is Jordy, that we go back and forth on a little bit. Are there issues that it's more important to stand up for your ideals and maybe take heat from the party? One is gerrymandering. We've all, to different degrees, been supportive of the Fair Districts group in Pennsylvania. I'm actually one of the plaintiffs for the lawsuit that the Keystone Legal Resource Center is
doing.
Great,
thank you.
Well, yeah, I mean, they found me, so I'm happy to say that, but well, Chip found me for them. But so anyway, do you have some thoughts about gerrymandering, or are there other issues where you feel like, you know, you're willing to stand up and say this is more important?
Buck the party.
Yeah, I'm going to buck the party.
You know what? You know, I have often bucked the party. And I have no problem doing that. On the gerrymandering, I haven't said much about it other than the fact that we need to stop it. Mm-hmm. I hope that lawsuit goes somewhere. When most people ask me about gerrymandering, I say we need to get back the legislature so that we stop the Republicans from continuing to do this. I'm not sure. To be honest with you, I have not read the lawsuit. So it's hard for me to comment on it exactly other than, you know, what I understand is the purpose of it is to, take it out of the hands of the politicians. And
yeah.
I think that's a great
thing. No, the details of the lawsuit aren't important. I mean, really what I want to pin you down on is, I think there are some Democrats who might say like, yeah, gerrymandering is important. But what they're really hoping is we'll take over the legislature and then we're going to do to them what they did to us. And I think that's... I can totally understand the appeal, but I think this is one of these cases where we need to have a longer term vision, and just making elections more competitive overall is going to help us.
No, I would be completely in agreement with what you're trying to do. I think we take it out of the hands of politicians altogether, put together a nonpartisan panel, and I've seen some people that have put together some things that say, why can't we do this? For example, I was out in Monroeville campaigning the other night, and Monroeville is divided between three congressional districts. Keith Rothfuss has a piece, Mike Doyle does, and I do. And I asked the committee chair, I said, can you tell me which wards and districts are mine?
Mm-hmm.
And she went, not looking at a chart.
Right, exactly.
And, and that's outrageous. You know, who do these constituents go to for a problem? Or the elected leaders in the township there. Because they get played between three different congressional districts.
Right.
I think that's outrageous. So, no, I would be with you. I understand the appeal of, hey, let's take it back and, see if we can just screw them the way they screwed us. And, but then we just go back and forth. I think we ought to try to start doing it right.
Right. I mean, I like to say, when I think about Americans and how much time they could spend arguing about the rules around football pressure and Deflategate, and, like there's an example where, you're worried about how the rules are being set. In this case, if this were sports, it's like the winning team gets to decide who the referees are and what rules they're going to play by. And no one would agree with that, right? So if we could get Americans to pay like 0.1% to political rules the way they do to sports rules, you know what I mean? And they'd realize how much of a problem this is.
For sure, yeah.
Like, let's have 10% of the coverage of gerrymandering that we did for Deflategate, and I'd be much happier.
Hey, Mike, I want to talk about current events a little bit.
Sure.
The opioid crisis, what it's like in your district, and your thoughts on Marino, the bill, the 60-minute story, the nomination by Trump, and the subsequent withdrawal. What are your thoughts on this whole thing? That's obviously a top topic right now?
The only part of that that I have focused on is the fact that, you know, we need to fully fund the center for, this is one of the things I was beating Tim Murphy up on, was that he had voted to take away 95% of the funds for the office that coordinates the fight against the opioid addiction crisis. You know, everywhere I go, I was in Westmoreland County, and they said that they've already got, I believe, 100 deaths already this year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're talking 50,000 deaths a year because of opioid addiction and overdoses there. So one of the things I would do is, you know, and this was, like I said, this is one of the things that just drove me crazy, and one of the things that led me to go after Tim Murphy was because I actually, after he had voted to cut the funding, he put out one of those, you know, franking newsletters that they put out, and he said he was saving lives in the opioid crisis. And I just went absolutely crazy. I said, you're causing people to die because you're taking away the resources.
Well, you know, Mike, let me ask you real quick. That's an interesting statement. Do you think that Tim Murphy and Tom Marino and these guys are complicit in the deaths of these Americans?
You know, I would like to say that. I don't know that.
I know that's a controversial thing to ask, and I don't want to put you in a bad spot, but my personal belief is that they are.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and you can make that case. You know, I've never seen that play well in the political world. I mean, we accused Tom Corbett of killing 3 people a day when he refused to expand Medicaid in Pennsylvania. You know, but it didn't seem to get us anywhere in the policy world.
Wow.
And, you know, and I can say those kind of things, and, you know, and I can, you know, and I can believe them, but I'm not sure they help us move policy. Those are the kind of the political statements that I think are fun to make, but at the same time, don't move us forward. You know, to me, I'd rather, like, you know, I've gone to two workshops since I've been in this campaign on understanding the depth and, you know, the severity of the opioid addiction crisis. And I've got 2 meetings scheduled within the next 2 weeks with providers out there on best ways to put together policy to solve the crisis. You know, but first of all, it starts with funding, you know, and it starts with how do we get the resources into the hands of the people who are going to, you know, solve the problems like Narcan. You know, how do we make sure that police and first responders have the tools they need to, one, save lives, and then, 2, how do we get those folks into rehab centers that work? And, you know, and do we need to arrest them and put them into a rehab program?
Right.
You know, some of these folks, you know, overdose again and again. And at some point, we have to say, okay, we need to break this cycle.
Right.
And I think it starts with, you know, I went to one workshop and I came home and, you know, I brought home educational materials and I took it over to the elementary school and said, you know, this is stuff we got to start teaching kids in 2nd, 3rd, 4th grade.
Yeah.
You don't use medications to just block pain. You know, I mean, there's certainly, I've got a couple of doctors I've been talking to. I don't have a policy platform written on how to solve that.
Yeah, it's complicated.
I just know that I will work with the providers and the, you know, the medical professionals, not those that are just passing out quick prescriptions, but I will work with those that are in the field to try to come up with some kind of plan.
Yeah.
To do that. I don't have an answer.
Okay, hey, it's a medical issue for me more than it is a legal one, but I'm certainly hope that we can find some compassion in our society to start using, you know, we can start looking at it as a medical issue. Hey, Mike,
yes.
I'm going to wrap up with you. I got a couple of questions for you. What's your path to victory, and how can people help you win?
Good question. My path to victory is getting out there and talking to people. I mean, I've talked to people in the NRA who I would have never thought would be with me because I have written a pretty strong gun violence prevention policy. But what I have found is when we actually get a chance to sit down and talk to people, we, you know, they go, okay, that makes sense. We could do that. And so, you know, for me, it's a matter of I obviously have to campaign differently here in the South Hills of Pittsburgh. Not change my tune or not change my policies, but I have to, you know, I have to address people up here that are earning, you know, well over $100,000 on average, and the people who are in rural areas such as Greene County and parts of Washington. We have to talk about a little different things, but I think the major issue is, you know, economic inequality, and how do we get the economy to meet their needs? You know, I have found some common threads. Everybody wants to make sure their kids have a good school. You know, everybody wants to know, can we give them a path to a dignified retirement?
Yeah.
You know, can we get people a decent job that allows them to pay to, you know, keep a roof over their family's head and food on the table? And I think when we talk pure economics with people, not high economics, kitchen table economics.
Yeah, bread and butter issues.
Exactly. I think when we talk to people that way, we're getting a very good response from people. And I think we keep doing that. As far as how can people help me, crossyforcongress.com. And
spell that out, Mike, will you? Spell that out.
It's Crossy, CrossSey, the number 4, Congress, CONGRESS.com.
Perfect.
Hey, Mike, it was a pleasure talking with you.
It was a pleasure talking with you guys. Thank you so much, and anytime I can be helpful, I'd be glad to.
Yeah. Listen, one more thing, just to kind of wrap up. This is relatively new for us. This is our second candidate interview, but we're going to hang up, and then we're going to come back and just the three of us kind of do kind of three takeaways. That'll be part of the podcast, and we'll have it up probably tomorrow.
Yeah, we should have it up tomorrow.
Okay, Mike, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
It's really great catching up, and I look forward to the next conversation, man, and I wish you nothing but the best, and I'm going to pitch in on your campaign somehow.
Hey, super. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Good luck.
Take care, bud.
Bye.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, here we are for a little discussion about three takeaways from our interview with Mike Crossy, candidate for Pennsylvania Congressional District 18, which is out the very southwest corner of the state. Is it going to Pittsburgh? I haven't had a chance to
It's Allegheny, Greene County.
Mm. Maybe that's why his web colors are green, like his website color is very green.
I thought that might be a union thing.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
So first takeaway is his demeanor. He had this great folksy demeanor. He's like 100% on the authenticity scale. You know, we should invent a little like a Geiger count, you know, and be like boop, 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 you know,
yeah.
That'd be great.
He got 100% on the authenticity scale.
Yep. You have anything to add, Chip?
I've met Mike before, and I think he's a tremendous candidate. We're lucky to have him in the race.
All right.
So, point number one.
Yep.
Great demeanor.
Yep.
Connecting with
yep.
you know these Reagan Democrats out
yep.
in Southwest PA that
yep.
we used to win Southwest PA all
right.
the time,
right.
but now we lose it every single time.
I would say, and this may be as much or more about our questions, but we need to get these candidates to give us the like 30-second why am I running? Like somehow
yeah,
we got into
no, every time
his
yeah.
second date with his wife, and it's just too much. It's not right for this format. Second thing is, and I thought this was really interesting, Chip. Understandably is you know furious at Marino for writing this bill that made it basically threw fuel on the fire of the opioid crisis. And Chip's question was, you know, do you, Mike Crossy, do you consider Marino, what was your language,
complicit.
Yeah.
blood on his hands. And Mike's answer was very thoughtful. You know, he said, and I wish we'd had more time to go into this with him. I mean, his answer was, we tried to do this with Corbett. Didn't work very well.
About the Medicaid expansion.
It didn't go very well. And
when you say do this.
Sorry. Basically, when you have social policy issues that we know statistically can kill people. And
yeah.
I understand that. But I think I think there's something really deep here, which has to do with how we talk about society and issues.
Yeah.
And for people who have a background in social science or statistics, we understand the complicity thing, but I think for other folks, regardless of their education level, they may see that as if you say that, then you're saying that people don't have responsibility for their own lives, and they're not comfortable with that. Like they'll agree that the opioid crisis, there are lots of factors involved, but they don't want to agree to
a story about how that happened that removes all responsibility from the people who are taking the drugs.
Yeah.
Mike wasn't going there, but I could see that fitting into his answer.
Yeah, no, he didn't think it was effective, and he's going to take the high ground.
Chip?
I appreciate it.
Thoughtful answer, intelligent answer.
I mean, I when I was looking at you, Chip, you had that look in your face like, oh, like I think all of us like, oh, I'd like to really kind of freeze that and go back and talk about it. I was sort of bummed we didn't have more time about his thinking about that. And third takeaway is, we've mentioned this a little bit already, but he's an excellent candidate.
The Democrats haven't fielded a candidate in PA 18 in two cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Mike is a top tier candidate, former union head. He's got political ties all over the state. PSEA is the largest union in Pennsylvania. He is a tier one candidate, and
he has governance experience. He said he'd been a township supervisor.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love candidates with municipal government experience because they know what it's like on the ground.
You know what I would love to see if somebody's done this, maybe we can do some research, but like we talk about, it's important to build at the bench. It's important to have people run.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see if we know that, right? Like if you look at, when was the last sort of big wave, like, let's say after Bush, which rattled people a lot, right? Like how many people who won in 2006 or who ran had run for offices in like 2004?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like for the first time, right? Like if there's a way to kind of capture.
Yeah, this is their second or third time running.
Exactly. Yeah. So that the experience they get, for every 1,000 people who run in 2017, we're going to yield 500 in 2018, and of those, 200 are going to win. I mean, I'm just looking at the numbers.
No, I mean,
you see what I'm saying? Because it would be nice to confirm this, because I go with this hypothesis that, like, when there are these shifts in the political atmosphere, you know, you have the Iraq War, which motivated a lot of people. You've got Trump, which
tax cuts.
You know,
motivated
a lot of people. And so you see people running. We see this here. You know, like, our sort of operating hypothesis is we need more people to run so we have a deeper bench. Well, do we actually see the yield from that?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4 years later.
Yeah.
Anyway, anecdotal evidence.
I'm just really happy that we have such top tier candidates and
Chris Carney.
Oh gosh.
Shameless plug.
Yeah.
I'm not Chris.
So yeah, anyway, I think if PA 18 is indicative of other congressional races, we are looking good for 2018, folks. So is that a wrap?
That's right.
All right. Until next time, folks.